You know, it's funny, you plan your whole life around gravity without ever actually seeing it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Like, if you drop an apple, it falls. You jump up, you come back down. It's just a rule. But in the investing world, people constantly want to pretend that gravity just doesn't exist.
Right. Or they think it somehow doesn't apply to them this time.
Exactly. Well, valuations are gravity. And right now, according to a really fascinating July 2026 Market Insight report from Save Your Wealth, that gravity is historically, like, dangerously heavy.
Yeah, heavy is the perfect word for it. It's weighing down everything.
And today we are figuring out how to stop your retirement from just, you know, getting completely crushed by it.
Because if you're retiring or, you know, planning to live off your investment withdrawals over the next decade, the stakes literally couldn't be higher.
No, they really couldn't. I mean, we're going to look at this perfectly reasonable, totally conservative retirement plan that launched with $1 million back in the year 2000.
Right, which sounds like a rock-solid starting point.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
But because of this market gravity, by 2026, that same retiree had only about $175,000 left.
It's devastating.
It really is. But here's the crazy part. If they had left that exact same $1 million completely untouched in the exact same market, it would have grown to $4.5 million in real purchasing power.
Wow. Yeah, it's a massive contrast. I mean, the market environment was identical in both of those scenarios.
So what went wrong?
Well, the difference was the starting valuation of that market, right? Yeah. Combined with the incredibly fragile math of taking real-world withdrawals.
Got it.
And that's really the mission of this deep dive today, going through this Save Your Wealth report. It's called What Today Valuation Means for Retirees.
Right. And I feel like we need to establish right out of the gate that, you know, a historically high stock market valuation is not a countdown clock to a crash.
No, not at all. It's not some mechanical siren telling you to panic and sell everything.
Okay.
It is, exactly as you put it earlier, it's gravity. It basically dictates the boundaries of what is historically possible over the next 10 years.
So if valuation is gravity, we really need to know exactly how heavy that gravity is today in 2026.
Exactly. We have to look at the gauges.
Right, because there are a lot of dense financial terms and charts in this report, and they're basically, you know, gauges on a dashboard. And right now, they're all flashing warning signs.
Yeah, bright red ones, honestly.
So let's look at the KPE ratio first, the Shiller KPE, or PE10. My understanding is that this essentially compares current stock prices to a 10-year average of inflation-adjusted corporate earnings, right?
Exactly right, yeah. It answers a really fundamental question. How expensive is the market relative to the actual earnings power these companies have demonstrated, you know, across a full economic cycle?
Okay, so a full cycle, not just a snapshot.
Right, we use a 10-year average specifically to smooth out the noise.
Which makes total sense.
Yeah.
Because we aren't just looking at what companies earned last quarter. I mean, last quarter could be wildly distorted by, I don't know, temporary hype or a sudden short-lived recession.
Exactly. It's highly volatile.
It's kind of like, it's like evaluating a baseball player. You wouldn't sign a guy to a 10-year mega contract just because he hit a bunch of home runs in August, you know?
Right. You'd be crazy to do that.
You want to look at his batting average over several seasons so you actually know what you're buying.
That's spot on. And right now, what you're buying in the market is exceptionally expensive.
How expensive are we talking?
Well, the KPE reading in this analysis sits at nearly 42.
Wow.
Yeah. And to put that in perspective, if you take the historical trend line of this metric and extend it out to a reading of 42, the implied real return, meaning your return after inflation, is negative 8.9% annualized over the next decade.
Wait. Okay, hold on. Negative 8.9% every single year for 10 years.
Yeah.
That sounds completely apocalyptic.
Right. And that is exactly why we have to put a massive warning label on that specific number.
Okay.
That negative 8.9% is an extrapolation. It's a mathematical model being stretched way outside the boundaries of normal historical observations.
So it's not a prophecy.
No, it's definitely not a prophecy. But the underlying mechanism is what really matters here. When you start buying stocks at a valuation this high, expecting to get a completely normal average decade of returns is just, it's incredibly optimistic.
Right. The historical math just doesn't support it.
Exactly.
But HAPI has some blind spots, doesn't it? Because corporate earnings can be manipulated. Like, companies do massive share buybacks. They use accounting strategies to boost their earnings per share.
Oh, all the time. Absolutely.
So if we really want to know if the market is too heavy, don't we need to zoom out past just corporate earnings and look at the actual economy?
We do. And that takes us straight to the Buffett indicator.
Okay. Warren Buffett's favorite metric.
Right. He famously called this metric the best single measure of where valuations stand at any given moment.
And what does it actually measure?
It looks at the total market value of U.S. corporate equities and divides it by the nominal U.S. gross domestic product.
So the entire economic output of the country.
Exactly. The whole pie.
So it's basically measuring the size of the stock market against the size of the actual economy.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And according to the data in the report from the first quarter of 2026, U.S. equities were valued at roughly $69 trillion.
Right.
While the economy's output, the actual GDP, was only about $32 trillion.
Yeah, so do the math on that.
That is a Buffett indicator of roughly 218%. I mean, the stock market is behaving like a house that's priced at more than double what the entire neighborhood's total income can actually support.
That is a brilliant way to frame the mechanism at play here because, you know, why does GDP matter to stock prices?
Right, why does it?
Because ultimately, stocks represent companies, and companies sell their goods and services to the economy.
Oh.
So if stock prices outpace the actual growth of the economy by this magnitude, and right now it sits about 57% above its long-term trend, which is the fourth highest ever record of it, you are inherently assuming that companies are going to somehow extract wealth that the broader economy isn't actually producing.
You're assuming they can defy gravity.
Exactly.
And you see the exact same thing when you look at how much investors are paying for every dollar a company makes in sales.
Mm-hmm.
The price to sales ratio for the S&P 500 is hovering around 3.65 right now.
Yeah.
And the historical long-term average is just 1.8.
Yeah.
But, you know, I hear all these warning sirens you're pointing out, and honestly,
yeah,
people have been calling the market expensive for a decade, and it just keeps going up.
That's true. They have.
So if I'm a buy and hold investor with a 10 or 20 year horizon,
yeah,
why shouldn't I just ignore these metrics entirely?
Right.
Like, why should I care if the market is 200% above its trend line today?
It's a completely fair question. And to answer it, we really have to look past the charts and look at the real world mechanics of a business. I mean, buy and hold is fantastic for keeping your emotions in check, right? But buying and holding does not magically guarantee you the same rate of return, regardless of what price you pay to enter the market.
Right. Because when you hear a price to sales ratio of 3.65, it sounds a little abstract.
It does.
But there's this incredible historical reality check in the report from back in 2002. It's about Scott McNeely, the CEO of Sun Microsystems.
Oh, this is one of my favorite examples.
Yeah. He was doing an interview right after the dot-com bubble had burst. And at the peak, his company's stock was trading at 10 times its revenue.
Right.
And he basically looked at the investors and asked, what were you thinking?
Yeah, he was baffled by his own stock price because he actually understood the underlying math of running his business.
Which investors apparently ignored.
Exactly. McNeely pointed out that even if an investor somehow received every single dollar of his company's revenue for a full decade, like as a pure dividend, the business still has obligations. You have to pay your employees, you have to buy supplies, pay taxes, and, you know, fund research and development.
Revenue isn't just pure profit you can hand out.
Exactly. So when you are paying 3.65 times sales for the broader market today, your margin for error as an investor is effectively zero.
Wow.
The future doesn't just have to be good. It has to be flawless to justify that premium. The report actually notes that historically, whenever the market starts with a price to sales ratio above just 1.5, the average real return over the following decade is a measly 3.5%.
We are starting at 3.65.
Right. It demands an extraordinary level of ongoing perfection just to survive.
You know, by the way, there's a fascinating human element to that McNeely story in the sources.
Oh, yeah. About his son.
Yeah. Scott McNeely's son, Maverick McNeely. He is a professional golfer with an engineering degree and over $23 million in PGA Tour earnings.
Which is incredible on its own.
Right. And the Save Your Wealth report draws this great parallel here. The McNeely family emphasized discipline and hard work rather than just, you know, coasting on inherited resources.
Right. He didn't just rely on his dad's money.
Exactly. And in investing, resources like being gifted a massive roaring bull market, they create incredible opportunity.
Definitely.
But discipline is what actually sustains you when that environment inevitably changes.
That's beautifully said. Discipline is exactly what you need for mean reversion.
Now, that is a scary phrase. Mean reversion.
Yeah, people don't like hearing that.
When people hear it, they immediately picture a stock market crash, the floor falling out. But it's kind of like, let's see, it's like a stretched rubber band, right?
Yes. Great analogy.
People assume mean reversion means the rubber band just snaps back and hits you in the face. But that's only one way to relieve the tension. You could also just, you know, slowly move your hands closer together to let the slack out.
That is exactly how these economic ratios normalize in the real world. Because metrics like the Buffett indicator are just fractions, right? Market value divided by GDP.
Okay.
So there are actually four paths for that rubber band to relax. Path one is the snap. Stock prices fall sharply while the economy stays stable. That's the crash.
Right. But path two is the sneaky one. That's where you move your hands closer together.
Right. In path two, GDP grows faster than the stock market. The economy expands, inflation does its thing, but stock prices just kind of move sideways for a decade.
Okay.
The denominator catches up to the numerator. It's less violently painful than a crash, but closing a valuation gap of this size takes a very, very long time.
And what's path three?
Path three is simply a combination of both. So a market correction followed by years of the economy outpacing stocks.
Which brings us to path four. And this is the one I really want to push on.
Okay, let's hear it.
Path four is that the historical relationship is just permanently broken. And looking around today, in 2026, artificial intelligence is embedded in everything.
It really is.
So if AI is triggering a massive productivity surge, making companies incredibly lean and, you know, permanently expanding their profit margins, couldn't we just be in a new normal?
It's a very common question right now.
Right. Like maybe those old 10-year averages just don't apply anymore.
It is entirely possible. And the Save Your Wealth Report explicitly acknowledges that artificial intelligence could create a new paradigm. I mean, economies do evolve.
So we might not need to work.
Well, this is where it comes down to risk management. How much of that miraculous world-changing AI success is already perfectly priced into the market at a CP ratio of 42?
Ah, I see.
Betting your entire retirement strategy on the assumption that financial history is just permanently broken and that we are operating in a flawless new era of endless margin expansion. It's an incredibly aggressive wager.
Okay, so the tension is clear there. The gravity is undeniably heavy. We've established that expecting historical average returns from this starting point is a gamble.
A huge gamble.
So let's transition from macro theory to personal reality. Because if you are listening to this and you're getting ready to retire, you don't care if the S&P 500 beats its historical average over the next 25 years.
No, you don't.
The only question you actually care about is, does my plan say I have to go back to work?
Yes. That is the brutal reality of retirement planning.
Right.
The rules of the game change entirely the moment you start putting money into your portfolio and start pulling it out to buy groceries. If you are retiring this year, in 2026, your starting board looks terrifyingly similar to an investor who retired back in January 2000.
Let's really dig into that January 2000 case study because it illustrates the danger perfectly.
Let's do it.
So imagine a hypothetical investor. They retire in January 2000 with exactly $1 million, fully invested in the S&P 500.
Okay.
And they follow what is widely considered the gold standard of financial advice.
Right.
The 4% rule. They withdraw an inflation-adjusted $40,000 in their first year.
Right. And on paper, withdrawing 4% seems incredibly safe. The problem wasn't their withdrawal rate. The problem was the heavy market gravity they started in and the specific order in which their returns arrived.
Sequence of returns.
Exactly. So they retire in January 2000. By December 2002, the dot-com bubble bursts. Their million-dollar portfolio drops to roughly $520,000.
Wow. They've lost nearly half their wealth in 36 months.
Yeah.
But here's where the math turns lethal. Their cost of living hasn't dropped. They still need that inflation-adjusted $40,000 to keep the lights on.
Right. Groceries don't get cheaper just because your portfolio went down.
Exactly. So suddenly, taking out $40,000 isn't a 4% withdrawal anymore. It's eating up almost 7.7% of whatever balance they have left.
Exactly. They are draining a shrinking pool. Now, the market does recover leading up to 2007, but because our retiree is continually bleeding the portfolio by taking those fixed withdrawals, the account never recovers to a million.
Right, because they're pulling money out of the recovery.
Exactly. It only climbs back to about $591,000. And then the 2008 global financial crisis hits.
Ouch. So by March 2009, at the very bottom of the crash, that portfolio has collapsed to approximately $259,000.
Yeah.
And that original $40,000 a year they need to survive, it now represents over 15.5% of their entire remaining life savings.
And this brings us to the shocking conclusion. Fast forward to June 2026. This retiree has lived through one of the most massive, historic bull markets in the history of the stock market post-2009.
The biggest run-up ever.
Right. But over that entire 26-year period, while taking out about $1.06 million to live, they are left with only about $175,000 in the account today.
And again, if they hadn't touched it, if they were just a buy-and-hold investor adding nothing but taking nothing, that million would be $4.5 million today in real purchasing power.
Which is mind-blowing.
It is. This is sequence of returns risk in a nutshell. It's like if you're sailing across the ocean and a market downturn is a hurricane.
Okay, I like this.
If you just ride it out, if you're a standard buy-and-hold investor, you get tossed around, but the storm eventually passes and you sail on.
Right.
But taking fixed withdrawals during that down market, it's like you're in the middle of a hurricane and you decide to chop up the wood from your own ship's hull just to build a fire to keep warm.
Oh, wow.
You might feel okay for a minute, but you are literally destroying the vessel you need to survive the rest of the journey.
That is a perfect visualization, because once those shares are sold at a loss to fund your lifestyle, they are gone forever.
They can't grow back.
Exactly. They are permanently removed from your compounding engine, and they can never participate in the eventual market recovery.
But let me push back on this a little bit, because the 4% rule is treated like absolute gospel in the personal finance world.
It is, yeah.
You read it on every blog, in every book. Are you saying the 4% rule is just completely dead? Like, is anyone retiring today doomed from the start?
No, it's not dead. And a 4% withdrawal rate doesn't automatically mean failure.
Okay.
What this research makes crystal clear is that combining a fully invested equity portfolio with historically high starting valuations and inflexible fixed real withdrawals, that is an incredibly toxic mix.
Okay.
The margin of safety that normally exists in the 4% rule is just heavily compressed right now.
So we've diagnosed the threat. The market gravity is heavy, margins are tight, and sequence of returns risk can systematically destroy a portfolio even if the market eventually recovers.
Right.
How do you actually survive this? Do you just panic, sell everything, and stuff cash under the mattress for the next decade?
Absolutely not. And the Save Your Wealth playbook is very clear about what you shouldn't do.
Okay.
You shouldn't abandon equities. Buy and hold investing remains one of the greatest ways to participate in long-term human progress and avoid emotional reactive trading.
But buy and hold doesn't mean buy and ignore.
Right, exactly.
Assuming that stocks will deliver the exact same return from every single starting price is a really dangerous assumption.
Exactly. The solution right now is evidence-based planning. Navigating this environment requires dynamic monitoring of both your spending and your risk tolerance.
And the report details four distinct pillars that a wealth management firm like Save Your Wealth actually uses to protect clients, right?
You do, yeah. Let's walk through those.
So the first pillar is financial plan monitoring. This isn't just trying to be an arbitrary benchmark.
Right.
It's looking at your specific life and asking, what rate of return does my plan actually require to succeed?
Exactly. It's knowing precisely how much cash liquidity you need for near-term spending and mathematically defining how much of a portfolio drop you can endure before the plan fundamentally breaks.
And the second pillar is valuation context, which is basically everything we've been unpacking today.
Yep. It's acknowledging when the long-term historical returns are likely to be compressed.
So you aren't quietly building a retirement plan on the assumption that today's really expensive market is going to be bailed out by an even more expensive market 10 years down the road.
Exactly. It's about living in reality. And then pillar three is long-term trend evidence.
And we should be really clear here. This is not day trading or timing the market.
Oh, definitely not. No.
This is utilizing robust metrics, things like 10-month and 12-month moving averages, credit signals, and market breadth, to objectively identify when the market is showing sustained deterioration or sustained improvement.
And finally, pillar four, which arguably provides the most tangible value of all. Behavioral coaching.
Yeah, having someone to talk you off the ledge.
Precisely. It is having an expert in your corner to explain what has structurally changed in the economy and what hasn't.
Right.
It prevents you from making undisciplined, fear-driven choices during a crash or overly euphoric, greedy choices during a market peak.
You know, having a firm like Save Your Wealth to actively manage your risk and navigate these tax implications, it feels a bit like upgrading the dashboard in your car to a dynamic GPS navigation system.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Like,
blindly buying and holding while taking withdrawals is like putting a brick on the gas pedal and just hoping the highway is totally clear for the next 1,000 miles.
Which is terrifying.
Right. But a dynamic GPS actively reroutes you. If it detects a massive traffic jam ahead or a severe sequence of returns risk, the system alerts you.
Like, it gives you options.
Exactly. It helps you pivot, take a side road, or maybe temporarily adjust your speed by holding off on a major withdrawal. But I have to ask.
Yeah.
If these moving averages and trend signals are so advanced, does active management guarantee that I am not going to lose money?
It is critical to be completely transparent about this.
No, it absolutely does not.
Okay, good to know.
The report emphasizes that no moving average, no valuation model, and no active management process is a magical shield. Trend following signals can lag behind reality.
Right.
They can generate false signals. And constantly adjusting a portfolio can create tax friction or cause you to miss out on sudden market rallies.
So if it's not perfect, why do it?
Because the goal of financial planning isn't perfection. The goal is survival and consistency.
Ah, right.
If your retirement plan requires the stock market to perform perfectly, you don't actually have a plan, you have a hope. Dynamic management is about making sure your financial survival isn't dependent on one single, uninterrupted, flawless market path.
That is a really crucial distinction to make. So, to recap our deep dive today, we are standing in a market environment with historically demanding prices.
We definitely are.
Whether you are looking at the K/P ratio smoothing out earnings, the Buffett indicator measuring against GDP, or price to sales showing razor thin margins. All the dials are confirming that the gravity is heavy.
Very heavy.
And if you are retiring today, blindly taking fixed withdrawals based on a static spreadsheet of historical averages is a massive hazard.
It's just too risky.
Right. Planning and actively monitoring your spending isn't just a good idea for the next decade. It is absolutely vital.
It is. And that leads to a final thought for you to mull over as we wrap up. We've spent a lot of time today on the macro math, the historical models, and the corporate mechanisms. But personal finance is ultimately deeply personal.
Yeah.
I want you to ask yourself, what is the exact portfolio value that would fundamentally force you to reduce your lifestyle or worse, force you to go back to work?
Wow, yeah.
Do you know that exact dollar figure? Because if you don't know that specific number and you don't have an actionable plan for what to do before you cross it, are you truly prepared for the reality of the next decade?
That is a heavy, completely necessary question to end on.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this and you aren't 100% sure of your answer, having a wealth management firm in your corner might be the best investment decision you can make entering this next phase of life.
I completely agree.
I highly recommend checking out Save Your Wealth's Compass dashboard or requesting a private discovery session with their team so you can actively stress test your own plan against these historical realities.
Yeah.
You don't have to navigate this heavy gravity alone.
No, you really don't.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. Take care, and we will see you next time.